Welcome to the South Cars Outreach Program. Join our training session in progress.
Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 in Good Amateur Practice. This SCAR server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8, Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they have checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control for this session this evening is actually Gary, KC2RMO. His location is Syracuse, New York. I'm going to begin it this evening. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. And I live in the city of Vero Beach, Florida, about 10 minutes from the Atlantic coast. We had a beautiful day today. 80 wonderful degrees is what it is right now, about 85 as a high today. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, we ask you to come aboard. Hearing no emergency traffic, and you know that's always a great thing, but I'm really looking forward to talking to some of those birthday stations. So if you're having a birthday either last week or this upcoming week, we'd like you to come aboard and check in this evening. So at this point, I'm looking for some birthday stations. Well, looks like we have no birthday stations either, but we'll have them very, very soon. You know, this evening, this is the TIN. It's called the TIN Open Forum. This is a monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, and we call it TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. And I do want to just go over a very few announcements with you, and then, Gary, I'm going to call on you to begin this evening's session. But we ask people to please check out our website. And once again, that's www.voip.southcars.com. Under our breaking news, there's a very important message to our membership about our hacking issue. And we ask that you please check the information in our roster to make sure it's accurate. Gordon and myself spent about 17 days or maybe even more putting that information back in. But some of it's old information. We may not have upgraded you to general or extra, or the birthday may be wrong, or the address may be wrong, so please check it out and let us know. Let me drop it here for just a moment, and I have one final announcement for you. As most of you know, our outreach classes have become very popular and in full swing right now. We finished our technician course sometime, I believe, in April. Maybe April 9th, but we begin our general on May the 19th. It'll run through June the 16th. We're asking that you hand out those flyers on our website to anyone that you know may be interested. We also ask that you just give them information. All podcasts of past classes, all future information is there, the pool, and anything we're going to talk about. And we'd sure like to have some more participants. We ask that they just send us an email with their name, their location, their call sign, their email address, and an emergency phone number, and we'll get back in contact with us. So when you think about it, today is the 9th. Exactly 10 days from now, we'll begin this wonderful course. And with that, I'm going to throw it over to our NCS this evening, KC2RMO. I'm sure he has a great program for us, and I'll be in the background, Gary, listening, and I'm looking forward to it. KC2RMO, hope your audio was okay, and that everything is fine with your system. So please come aboard and begin our session this evening.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Yeah, you never know. You never do know, do you? It is a kind of a cloudy, scuddy looking night here in Syracuse, New York. We've got 68 degrees, not the beautiful weather that Kathy has down there. We're almost on the lookout tomorrow for some severe stuff. At least they're talking that way right now, so we'll see what happens. But good evening, everybody, and welcome to tonight's Thursday Informational Network. My name is Gary. My call is KC2RMO, and tonight we're going to be a little hardware intensive. We'll be talking about some of the tools of the trade. Without microphones, broadband internet, routers, and in some cases proxies, we wouldn't be having this session, and there'd be no South Cars VoIP. Now, I'm going to take the topics a little out of order, and we'll be taking check-ins along the way, so let's get started, and we'll kick things off with the cable company part of our title, or broadband internet. It's what makes this VoIP thing possible. But how does it work? Now, in telecommunications, cable internet is a form of broadband internet access that uses the cable television infrastructure. You know, you got a lot of wires out there. You got a lot of cables. You've got a lot of amplifiers out there. And really, it would be a waste with such a cool thing as the internet not to use that. Now, like digital subscriber lines and fiber optic networks, cable internet bridges the last mile from the internet provider to the subscriber. It's layered on top of the existing cable television network infrastructure, just as DSL uses the existing telephone network. Cable networks and telephone networks are the two predominant forms of residential internet access. Now, recently, both have seen increased competition from fiber deployments, wireless, and mobile networks. You might have, for instance, in some cities, a citywide wireless network. There are places that are enjoying that. And there are a lot of different mobile options nowadays, too, with the 3Gs and the 4Gs. So those are out there as well as options. Cable is one of the most common home internet connections in the United States. Unlike dial-up and DSL, cable ISPs don't transfer data over the phone lines. Instead, they use the same coax cable that delivers TV signals to your television. Now, I'm going to buy a nickel for a minute here. Now, the data and TV signals travel along the same path, although they're in separate channels in the cable. That means you can view TV shows and access the internet without running separate cables into your home. And of course, a lot of us do that. It's kind of commonplace now, but a couple of years ago, that was pretty much miraculous. Users who regularly access the internet will appreciate cable internet service for two reasons. It's fast, and it's always available. The aging dial-up internet service is only available when you dial into your internet service provider's server via your dial-up modem. And whereas the dial-up internet service transfers data at a mere 56 kbps, and that's kilobits per second, a cable modem can transfer data up to 30 megabits per second. That's a big change. And I'll tell you something. When years ago, I worked for a couple of them, and we were a VoIP telephony provider, and we also had a dial-up internet service. And the problems that folks used to have, those old dial-ups were amazing. And when they would a lot of times they would, geez, you know, you put support, you know. But I can't stand running that slow anymore. And I got Roadrunner, you know. We'd hear that all the time. Just a bit. What?
All right, guys and gals, I'm sorry for that. I've just muted RMO. Gary's apparently having some technical problems, and it sounds to me like he's got a dirty or not fixed microphone cable. It sounds like a basic ground hum with the plug nut inserted fully in. But at any rate, this is Gordon, KY6V, down here in Central Florida. We'll pick it up for a few minutes. When he drops it, he'll know that I'm talking, and I'll unmute him and get him right back into things, and I'm sure he can quickly fix the problem. At any rate, what Gary was talking about is your ISP service, and there's a lot of ways to get to Rome. You know, there's DSL, there's cable, there's dial-up. All have their features. The speediest these days are, if you're lucky enough to have a service that has brought fiber optics into your home or into your business, you're running at the top level of interchangeability that you can. So let's see here. Oh, I have seen that RMO has dropped off. I was going to check with him, but he is currently offline. Before we proceed into other areas here of his discussion tonight, anybody have any comments on ISPs? Are they treating you properly? You know, it's a I don't know how to put this, not a very nice situation. When all of a sudden your ISP goes down, you wake up in the morning, you turn on your computer, and you don't have any internet, you don't have any email, and you go, oh, my life today is just going to be horrible. Anybody like to come in and say good evening before we proceed? KY6V for South Cars. Over.
Yeah, Lima, Victor, Quebec.
Sierra, United, November.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
Okay. I heard Mr. Scotland in there. Good evening, Robertson. I heard Miss Sunshine, S-U-N. I heard VXP. Anybody else, please? All right, let's take it right to the top. Well, let's see here, Robert. I've got 714, so it must be 1214 in the night. You have already started the new day. Is that correct, sir? And good evening from KY6V. Over.
Well, good evening, Gordon, Kath, and everybody else that's on the net tonight. I just thought I'd pop in and say hello. I'm going to have an early night for one night. I'll give you my Echolink number, $007.09. At the present moment, I've never had any problem with DSL. That's what I run. We are not fortunate enough to get fiber optics into the house yet. I don't think I'll see it in my lifetime anyway. But it's just one of those things. I just thought I'd pop in and say good evening to everybody. And I'll catch you all later on. I'm going to have an early night for one night, Gordon. I'm not that long in from the club. So, we've had a busy night. And for information about my health, is doing 100% at the present moment, and may it continue. This is Mike 3, Lima, Victor, Quebec, in West Central Scotland.
Yes, sir. We're right behind you on that one, Robert. May it continue. Oh, I didn't realize that you were on DSL out there. You handled your station very, very well, so you've learned the tricks of the trade. DSL modems, and we'll be talking about this in a little bit, I think, if we get Gary back, and I see Gary back. So stand by, Gary, and we'll get you back online. DSL modems, you know, are primarily, not all, but primarily a router and a modem put together. And that means they've got their own firewall system in that baby, and they've got their own IP addressing system in that baby, and it can drive you cuckoo. Did you go through all of that, Robert? Over.
Yeah, I did it first, Gordon, but once I learned the master, it was okay. First time I ever connected into the Echolink, that was one of my first problems with firewall, and I had everything else that went along with it, but I managed to get it all sorted out, and with a wee bit of help off of one or two friends to talk me through it, I managed to do it, and that's been it. I've never had much problems at all. Touch wood, hairy wood. They'll give you a wee bit more information, Gordon. I've got to wear my headphones all the time now because I'm going corned beef, if you know what that means, QSL.
You rascal. Okay, we'll put some fresh spearmint on those bedposts when you go to bed tonight, and I know that's going to be shortly. Thank you, Robert. Let me bring you up to date. Gary, I've opened it up for roll call here. We've got LVQ, who has just spoken. I've got SUN standing in line, and VXP, that's Mr. Ohio. And as soon as we roll these three, I'll send it back to you, sir. K6SUN, Miss Sunshine, KY6V. Go ahead, please.
Well, good evening, Gordon, and everyone else. You know, I wanted to make a few comments. When I lived in the state of Michigan, I didn't have cable. I had dial-up, and I will say it was very, very, very slow. I do have cable now, pretty fast, Comcast cable. If I'm correct, it's 30 megs down and about 10 up. It's a very fast system, and I normally don't have any problems, but I think in the past week or so, the Internet's been going down and coming up. Not sure if it's the cable company, it's the area, it's the weather, or it's the modem. But I've also been having those issues at school as well. I have AT&T through our system there, and it's been going down quite a bit. And as you well know, Gordon, I teach by computer. When the computer is down, I cannot be teaching. And that happened again today. It happened last week. And actually today we were doing an end-of-course exam in our Algebra 1 classes, and the Internet went down in the middle of it, so it took an entire day for these kids to finish these courses. But I want to say I have two laptops. They're wireless that usually are pretty good. I think I have between two and four desktops that aren't wireless, but they're all on cable, and, you know, I just have certain issues at certain times, but otherwise they work fine. I did want to check in and talk to you this evening and give you my information, and hopefully we'll hear back from Gary. I'm interested in his program this evening. Back to you, Gordon, from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy. Yeah, I see Gary standing tall here on the connect list, so I'm sure he's back to battery. And before I comment to you, Kathy, Gary, what we were hearing was a hum. You started to break up a little bit. The hum was in there, and then all of a sudden the hum was prevalent, and your speech was gone. You being an old broadcaster, it sounded exactly to me like the microphone plug was not properly seated, properly making connection, and you were getting the ground hum as opposed to any audio. Well, thank you, Kathy. I hope that your gremlins disappear with AT&T and Comcast and so on. It's, as I mentioned a little while ago, you know, it's sort of mind-boggling when you wake up in the morning or try to go to bed at night, you turn on the computer and check your email, and it's not there. I mean, life just stops instantaneously. Thank you, Kathy. Up to Ohio, VXP. How you doing tonight, Rick? KY6V and South Cars. Over.
KY6V and Annette and 1VXP. Yeah, my week Saturday night, ended up having a update on my computer. I said, okay, no problem. As I shut down and started up the next morning, somehow went through the reconfiguring the update, and then died. The computer actually just shut right off. And I was like, okay. I went through trying to do a restore. Apparently, that was messed up. So I said, well, let me do a factory reset. And that really is messed up. So come to find out, it's a hard drive issue on the old computer. And it was hard for 3 days with no computer, no internet. I finally went out and picked up an HP 2000. And now I'm getting used to the Windows 8. But as far as cable companies, I've had both the telephone cable internet and the regular cable. And I prefer the cable system itself. Of course, the phone company, they put up fiber optic cable, but they still have not done anything with it. They put that up about a year and a half ago, and still haven't hooked up anybody. So makes me wonder what's going on. But I do prefer the cable internet. I do have a high speed and really enjoy it. And the only thing I think about cable companies, they all want you to get the home phone number or home phone. And I say, well, if the cable goes off, the phone is out. So what good is that? I'd rather have a cell phone. It took me 6 months to finally convince them I do not want a phone system. And one VXP back to net control.
Well, you have me smiling from ear to ear here. Sir, KY6V, Central Florida for South Cars. You know, I'm one of these old reprobates, I guess. Rick, my system at the house does not subscribe to the TV cable portion of the cable feed from the ISP. I said, hey dudes, all I want is internet, and you will charge me for only internet. And I have one of these old outside antennas that I can rotate around and get all the stations locally that I want. Very rarely watch TV anyway, and save a lot of money by the same token. Well, thank you very much, Rick. Let me turn it up to Gary and see if he's all set here and running. Gary, I don't know what happened to Jim up there in Georgia tonight. He was supposed to be your backup. I do not see him listed on the parade, so he may be having some problems up there, and knowing Jim, I'm sure he'll get them taken care of pretty rapidly. But at the moment, whether you like it or not, Gary, I'm your shotgun. KY6V to KC2RMO. Over.
Well, I have to tell you, I can't think of anybody else I would rather have watching my back, and that's a fact. And hope I'm coming through okay. Now, I took a look at everything. Now, the audio system that we have here, it's probably a little different than what folks are generally using, but I use a microphone. I use this Behringer C1 microphone going into a mixer, which in turn goes into the line input on the computer. Everything checked out just fine. Everything is great. I have I take the board audio, and that is my monitor, and I also use the meter on the Echo Link, and I wasn't seeing anything that indicated a hum there. So that gave me a little bit of a theory, and it has to be, I'm thinking, maybe in a couple of different areas, okay? The first one being possibly gamma rays or urban renewal. Throwing that one out, I'm wondering, and I've seen this happen, maybe not to the point of it being a hum, but I have seen this in VoIP telephony, where you could lose a signal to the point of it almost sounding like a hum if for some reason your bandwidth is compromised. And that kind of gets into the discussion that we're having tonight. So before I go any further, I'm going to turn it back over to you, Gordon, and just see how we're doing. This is KC2RMO, and hoping that we're sounding okay.
You rascal. You're sounding excellent. Proceed with gusto, sir. Urban renewal. Doesn't that depend on what side of the street you live on, sir? KY6V, over.
It totally does, but gamma rays are universals. You know, either way you lose, I think, you know, that's what happens. But thank you. Thank you very much for picking that up. I think we're going to be okay. Somebody obviously shout if we're having troubles again. But I do wonder, though, about that being a some sort of a bandwidth compromise that causes that, because that's kind of interesting. So tonight, just in case you're joining us late or you were wondering what the heck is going on with all these audio difficulties, you know, I figured, you know, urban renewal is as good as anything else. We're talking about microphones, cable companies, proxies, and routers. Sounds like a law firm, but it's really some of the hardware that makes all this possible. And we had been talking a little bit about our cable connections and how they really do make things a lot better for us. I'll tell you a little anecdote here. I remember I was one of the very first people in the city of Syracuse to have Roadrunner cable internet. I was sitting on my front steps one day. It was a beautiful summer day. I just finished cutting the lawn. I said, I'm going to take a little break, and some guy came by. He had some advertising flyers, and so you ever hear about Roadrunner? I said, yeah, he's the guy that, you know, gets chased by the coyote. And he goes, no, it's a new type of cable, internet. And I said, you can get cable internet? I said, well, how's it work? He says, well, I'm not really sure, but here's a brochure. I said, yeah, it sounds pretty good, you know, and so I called him up. I got I got signed up. I think it took them a couple of weeks to get me going, and I think at that point there was about 150 people in the city that had cable internet, and I had a Macintosh Performa 6116, and that was a 66 megahertz machine. And that thing was blazingly fast. I mean, that was faster than some of the stuff that you see nowadays, even because, again, there were so few people on. We had just tons and tons and tons of bandwidth, so it was great. I enjoyed that for a long time, but living in the university area, it didn't take too long for the kids to catch on and latch onto that, and my bandwidth kind of went right down. So we're talking about this hardware tonight, and we'll move along to the next topic that we had, which was routers. And, you know, it wasn't all that long ago that you had to be a super geek to even think about messing with a router. And I don't know what that makes me, because I took two semesters of Cisco networking. But routers have changed substantially since those days, and so has their control interface. So just about anybody can set one up, and even the most advanced features are reasonably easy to access and implement. The most common router, probably the Linksys WRT54G. Now, that's the blue one with the two antennas. There are designators assigned to routers. They correspond to the 802.11 standard. Now, you don't have to know what that is. Just know that that's the standard that all networking goes by, okay? If you see an N, it's better than a G. An N will give you more speed and greater range. And features? Well, I just got a new Asus router with preset enhancements for what you do the most. Online gaming, you can choose one setting, or movies, or another setting. And you can even optimize the QoS, that's quality of service, for VoIP. Lots and lots and lots of changes since the old days. I remember the first router I ever had to mess with had a DOS control interface. So we'll take some check-ins right now as we move right along. And we would like to hear from you, is what he was trying to say, as we continue. On the Thursday Night Informational Network, I'm KC2RMO. This is South Cars.
Six Victor,
come on aboard.
Hey, thanks, Gary. KY6V here, Central Florida. You know, routers are very dear to me. Since we started the VoIP network back here in January of 2008, we've had a lot of people going through a lot of grief on getting set up and able to work VoIP. Not necessarily the Echolink program, but any program that requires particular port forwarding. And a lot of us have not taken the time to understand how IP addressing works, particularly in a local environment like your local network, be it your house or your office. Let me buy a nickel here for a second. So there are two things here, sir, that I would pass on and see if you agree with this. Number one, if you take the time, and there's not much effort in this, to establish your computer with a static IP address as opposed to a dynamic IP address. The difference being static will always be the same and dynamic could change from time to time depending on the situation. What happens here is that once you get into your router and set up the proper port forwarding configuration that is needed, you have to put an IP address in there. I think you and I have talked about this, Gary. You know, if you have a power failure, even if it's momentarily, the router comes back up. The router has its own addressing system for giving out IP addresses. And if you're on a dynamic system, you may have been a .100 to start with, you know, at the ending of the IP address. And get a power failure, you come up with .105. Your router is saying in the port forwarding that you set up, I want it Echolink on these ports to work on this IP address, and bango, you're not talking to anybody. The other thing I'd like to mention, one more nickel, is that a lot of us don't stop to think about our modems. And if you're on a DSL system particularly, a DSL modem is actually a router and a modem all together in one case. That being, it has its own firewall in there. It has its own IP addressing system called a DHCP. And those of us that have got four or five computers that are running in the house, running through a router, and the router is then connected to the modem, just runs into all kinds of havoc. Because there are two systems trying to assign IP addresses, and there's two systems that have to clear the port forwarding, and it can get messy. So we have to think about what we're doing, Gary. KC2RMO from KY6V, over.
Well, you're about 10,000% right on that. And I think just before we go any further, it's really kind of important to do a little review about what we're talking about, because maybe not everybody understands what an IP address is. But the way that networks work, and that includes the network in your home or the internet, is a series of what are called IP addresses. Now, IP addresses are divided up into different classes. So the big networks that carry the traffic across the world have one classification, and then those that are the intermediates have another classification, and then you have what's called a LAN, a local area network, which is the stuff that you have in your home, and that can be wired or wireless. But they all have addresses, and it's just like having the addresses in a city. That you live at 1234 your street, and that's within your town, USA, right? So the thing is, though, that if you just translate those into numbers, a series of numbers that have meaning to the computer and to the router, that becomes your street address, if you will, on that network, which in turn has an address on a bigger network, which in turn has an address on an even bigger network. Okay, it's a lot of tiers, and it's a little bit oversimplified, but that's how it works. And the way that it gets that information out, and though it gets those numbers assigned, at least at some level or another, is through a device called a router. Now let me buy a nickel here for a minute. And a router is just that. It routes addresses. It routes your computer address to other computers, be it on your local address or be it around the world. Now the whole point of what Gordon was talking about was you have a choice. You can go into your router setup and you can say, I want the router to automatically assign every device that comes on this network an address, or I can assign it for the router. Now, you would kind of think that the idea of having the router do the work is a good idea. In some ways it is. It's a lot less work. You don't have to know so much. You don't have to take the time to do it. But as Gordon said, there creates a lot of problems when you're doing things like what we're doing right now. The idea is that you want that equipment to come up every time, knowing exactly where everything is and nothing changes. Okay, so it's a lot better that way. And that's why if you're a business, when you talk to your ISP, your internet service provider, that you get a dedicated or static IP address from them. That way, you always have the maximum reliability. So that's what that's all about, and that's exactly right, Gordon. I agree with you completely. And it's not that hard to do. It really isn't. Folks can go into their router setup, and usually they've got a pretty good help menu that's associated with that. Let me buy a nickel. Either use the help menu that came with your router, or you can actually go up on YouTube and just type in the type of router that you have, and just say, okay, I want to see how to assign a static IP, and follow the easy to follow instructions. And the next thing you know, you have a lot less in the way of problems as far as losing connections and stuff like that. Much better way to go about things, that's for sure. And thank you, Gordon. Tonight we're talking about microphones, cable companies, proxies, and routers, and we're looking for further check-ins tonight on the TIN.
This is WV4LBM.
Okay, we have LBM. Anybody else want to come aboard? Okay, nobody right now, but Jim, come on aboard, and let's hear from you tonight on the TIN.
Well, as you can see, this is WV4LBM. 1880. As you can see, I'm a horse, among the other things. I'm probably a whole lot of donkey and all that too, but anyway, I've been sort of under the weather all week until today. I did get out and done some yard, sitting, and then I came back in and went to the Amtrak and done a few things in there. And yeah, as you would guess, I totally forgot about the net, so I'm sorry. But I'm here now, WV4LBM, Alternate Control.
Hey, Jim, thank you very, very much for checking in tonight, especially not feeling well. Hope you feel better. Like instantly, and again, thanks for taking the time. You know, one other thing I just wanted to point out, or to follow up on too, that Gordon was talking about was was with the DSL routers, or the DSL modems rather, being usually a combination device. They can be problematic, and that's part of the problems that folks have with DSL too. Is that as Gordon mentioned as well, that you have all these different layers of addresses, and that's one more layer that they're putting out, and it can get really confusing, and it can cause a lot of issues. So if you do have DSL and you do have the ability to do any sort of configuration, best to go with static if you can do it. Also, a good idea to maybe make a support call to your telephone company and ask them how to do it and see if you can get some instructions that way. One of the things we're talking about tonight, too, is proxies. Now, that's a topic not often brought up, and it's kind of misunderstood. What the heck is it? A proxy or proxy server is basically another computer which serves as a hub through which Internet requests are processed. By connecting through one of these servers, your computer sends requests to the proxy server, which then processes your request and returns what you wanted. Okay, in this way, it serves as an intermediary between your home machine and the rest of the computers on the Internet. Proxies are used for a number of reasons, such as to filter web content, go around restrictions like parental blocks, or to screen downloads and uploads to provide anonymity when surfing the Internet. Now, why would you want to use this? Well, obviously, as we were talking about before, there may be a situation where you need to remain anonymous in a situation, for instance, if you're a government organization and you need to maybe be a little stealthy, you would use a proxy. And there are business situations where you would want to use a proxy. So those are all legitimate reasons, and there are some kind of fishy reasons why folks would want to use one, too. If you want to surf the web anonymously, then proxies can provide you with the means to hide your home IP address from the rest of the world. By connecting to the Internet through proxies, your home IP address will not be shown, but rather the IP of the proxy server will be shown. Now, think about this. If you're to go and, say, set up an RDP connection to a proxy and then work the proxy from there, you could have an address that is many, 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 many miles removed from where you are and totally confusing the situation. There are a number of proxies that can provide you with anonymous service. You can find a list of these by simply typing proxy list into any search engine. There's some proxies which are free and some charge money. The choice is up to you, but paid proxies tend to be more reliable, faster, and more secure. So if you've ever had the idea that perhaps you want to surf the Internet without being seen, then a proxy is for you. We're looking for some more check-ins right now, so let's see if anybody wants to join us on the TIN. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
Well, this is Roger, K5MOW, checking in tonight.
And 6Victor with a recheck, sir.
Okay, we have MOW and 6Victor, and anybody else for right now? Okay, nothing heard, so we'll go right ahead with MOW. Roger, come on aboard.
Well, good evening to you there, sir. I'm checked in, and get an engine and stand by and listen. So I'll say good evening to everybody, and I'll be standing by listening. This is Roger 5, MOW, in Friendswood, Texas.
I'm not sure if you were turning it over to me. Hey, Roger out there in Friendswood, Texas. Nice to see you aboard, sir. KY6V, you've got your hum back, Gary. You want to checky-checky? Over. You know, what I would do, sir, is take a sledgehammer and pound it right on that desk, and I'll bet you that'll take care of the whole problem. Over. All right, let me give you a chance to check it out. Gary, I'll pick it up here for a couple of minutes. KY6V here for South Cars. Gary's having some technical problems, but he'll be on top of it quickly, I think. Roger, out there in Friendswood, Texas. My goodness gracious. It has been so long, I thought maybe you went under the grass. Roger, over.
Yeah, it has been quite a while since I've been getting on the nets and checking in and stuff like that. It's been working a lot of hours and haven't had a whole lot of time, but maybe I'll chill a little bit more often when I'm out in the work truck and on the old iPhone. Boy, it makes it, a matter of fact, that's what I'm talking on now for that matter, even though I've got my link sitting right next to me. I just loaded up the iPhone and on. So get back and hopefully I'll be more often and checking in to some more of the nets. K5MOW.
Well, nice to hear you, sir. You know, we miss here in Texas checkboard. But thank you very much, Roger, and we'll catch you the next time around, I'm sure. This is KY6V stepping in for a moment. I've been running your backup here, Jim, if you don't mind. Sorry to hear that you're under the weather. You sound just a tad bit different and a little hoarse this evening, so if you don't mind, I'll continue. Jim, do you have any comments, sir? KY6V, over.
I've had a big just fine, Gordon. And you're right, I'm sure sounded different, all right. As a matter of fact, the first of the week, I was really low. I could sing bass in any quartet that ever wanted one. Because my throat hadn't started messing up yet, but my voice box had dropped about 2 octaves. And it sounded great. I sure wish I could have kept that. But you have. Oh, boy. I think I'm getting over it. This is going to take a little time. Anyway, that'd be just fine, Gordon. Over.
Well, I bet you can sing bass. You sound like you're just about in that octave range. But I heard that pretty lady in the background, Jim, by the name of Rebecca, and she sounds like she's in full voice and still singing tenor. Would she like to say hello? Over.
Thanks, Gordon. I'll be glad to say hello. Yeah, this has been a rough week, and we'll be glad when we're both back in full swing. I had it, but the same mess that Jim's got, but nowhere near as bad as what he's got. And it's on us for a loop, but every day is better than the day before. And I am so thankful for that. And when he went outside out today, I was thinking probably 2 or 3 hours max. Yeah. How about, like, what was it? 4 or 5? That was almost 5 hours and he was up. And yeah, I think he kind of overdid it there, but so anyway, he's still recovering from being up so much, and he's trying to get him a little bit of supper, and he's tired enough that he's probably not going to eat much of it. I expect I'll be putting it up and warming it up for a snack later, which is fine. I'll just take it at the speed he's able to handle it, and we'll go from there. Hope everyone else is doing well, and if you're getting the creeping crud and feeling puny, I hope you're back to yourself in rapid order. This is KK4MOX. Turn it back over to you, Gordon.
Close the windows, put on an extra blanket, take a couple of sips of some good brandy. All right, Rebecca, thank you very much. Jim, don't worry about it. I've got Gary's back, and Gary is back. As a matter of fact, I see that he disconnected and reconnected. Gary, before I turn it to you, I'd like to make a couple of comments on the proxies. That for those who may not be aware, there is a free downloadable program from Echolink.org, the Echolink program that you're using here this evening, for proxy service. It utilizes a Java-based DOS operation on your computer. Works very, very well. In fact, I have, 6 or 7 computers in my system that are all remote computers that I utilize this proxy on. So instead of using a public proxy, you can use your own private proxy and give that to the people that you wish. And that allows you, basically, the way this works, let me buy a nickel here for a second, is that you don't have to worry about port forwarding on your routers, port forwarding on your computers. Everything is transmitted out on port 80, which is the normal and existing port for internet traffic, okay? So you connect to this proxy on port 80, not worrying about any port forwarding and firewall issues. If you give it the right credentials, and you have to have a password to get into it, it'll treat you and turn you right into the Echolink server, and you're off and running just like you were doing it direct from the house. A great service, absolutely free, and works beautifully. So, KC2RMO, are you ready again, sir? KY6V, over. No, all we're getting is that hum level. You know, I hate to repeat this, Gary, but why don't you fiddle with your microphone cables in and out of the mixer and into the sound board? There's something that is not making connection. Over. Okay, I guess he's fiddling at the moment. Guys and gals, Gordon here, KY6V, back up for Gary this evening. TIN, Thursday night, South Carr's presentation. We're talking about routers and modems and ISP cable suppliers and you name it. He's going to get into microphones, and I hope he clears up his problem before we get to microphones, because he's a microphone expert, having dealt with it professionally in the broadcast business for quite a number of years. He can tell you some tales about how these doggone things work and which ones are the good ones and which ones are the bad ones. But before we go that far, any other check-ins, please? Gordon, KY6V for South Carr's. Suffix only, and call now, please. Over. No, still hum, Gary, one more time. Over. Well, I think I'd take that ribbon microphone offline and plug in a crystal. I'm just joking with you, Gary. One more time. Go ahead, sir.
I might find an F1 carbon coverage.
Oh, my goodness gracious. We'll get into that in a moment. Hello, Jim. Yeah, well, I threw away all my F1s and I went to T1s to start with. Okay, Gary's having troubles. Any other check-ins out there before we continue, please? KY6V.
Sierra United November.
Okay, I had a little delay on that. Hi, Kathy. And I've got Jim in there, too. I'm going to pick up Jim. But Jim, ladies are first. K6SUN, go ahead, Kathy.
Well, I know Jim is an expert with microphones, but, you know, I am not. The only one I have here is this Logitech that I've ever bought. So I'm really looking forward to a little bit about the history or some of the older ones. And so, Gordon, or you, Jim, I see that Gary has once again checked off and not there. So could you maybe tell me about some of the older ones, the things that have been in the past? I'm thinking of those, you know, broadcasting, what I see on television or when I used to watch television, the old microphones that they used to talk into. And I actually see one of those, I think, with Gary on his website or on the QRZ. So maybe you could go over that with me and maybe you could go on further with the microphones, because all I have is this one. That's all I've ever used, and maybe that's the wrong one. So back to you, KY6V.
Well, first of all, Kathy, you sound excellent. Your quality, your audio bandwidth, your audio amplitude is excellent. And I would recommend don't worry about changing it. You know, it's a funny thing. I'm going to turn this over to you, Jim, in just a second. But people through the years, at least with me, change their microphones as often as they change their shorts. You know, there's so many types of microphones out there, and everybody is striving for the best sound and the best performance they can make with maybe their gravelly voice. And we have carbon microphones, and we have crystal microphones, we have ribbon microphones, we have dynamic microphones, we have condenser microphones, and it goes on and on and on. All of these have just a little bit different flair. Some attract some people, and some do not. Now, Jim, up there in Georgia, I don't know how long you can talk with that throat situation of yours, Jim, but Jim put on an excellent net meeting here not too long ago, right here on South Cars, about discussing the different microphones and what makes one sound the way that it sounds. So throw away the F1 button, Jim. That's number one. Go to T1 and see what happens. KB4LBM from KY6V. Go ahead, sir. Well, now maybe I've lost Jim. I see you connected, Jim. WB4LBM, KY6V, are you there, sir?
Yeah, I'm trying to get some sausage down my throat here and just about to lose it. Anyway, yeah. Well, you think I'm offering the F14. That's what I'm going to do to get rid of it. But, anyway, there's a lot of microphones out there. And you can make it shape your voice. You know what you're going to do. Make one have a lot of lows, or you can make it have a lot of highs, emphasize certain parts of it. And you can do that, or you can I can hardly explain it, because if you thought of it, you can do it. That's the thing, is thinking of it, what you want to do. Now, if you get in your mind what you want to do, then you can do it. I use this little old HT, and it isn't really good quality. It's kind of high pitched, but I may get in there someday, some other kind of microphone in. But anyway, it's working all right now. So I wouldn't have Miss Sunshine do a thing. Her audio is excellent, just par excellent. When she first got that computer, it was a little hot. But when she turned that down a hair, maybe she just sounded like a million bucks every transmission. And sounded like about a 32-year-old million bucks. So, I think I would keep it right there. Go ahead,
George. Well, I couldn't agree more, Jim. She's got beautiful audio. And Frank, I have seen an enhancement in the quality with a new laptop that she's using. I guess it's obviously a different sound card, possibly, but it's just absolutely superb. Jim, while I've got you, would you care to comment You know, you're an old timer. You've gone through all of this baptismal of audio production. How do you feel about the newer transceivers that are out today where you can tweak the IF bandpass and change your audio characteristics? Furthermore, there are some great, and I believe I'm saying this correctly, great mixer programs that are available for your computer now that gives you a complete equalizing setup for your sound card of your particular computer. You can accentuate the bass, you can accentuate the treble, you can lower one, you can lower the other, you can boost mid-range. I mean, if people took time to really work with that, they'd sound like CBS. What do you think, Jim? Over.
Well, you're right, and they sure have, and it's great. Sideband always sounded not good anyway. I mean, even if a fella can tune it just right, it don't sound just exactly great. And they've finally come to the conclusion, and rightly so, that they could chalk it around with a microphone and make it much better. For example, you take the MC50 microphone. Good microphone, and you know. But if you get one and it's new, might as well say, it is not going to sound good on anything you put it on. It will sound like you're in a hole. That's because it's got too many air holes around the cartridge, and as a result, the sound goes in and just echoes around in that little pencil-shaped container it's in, and all you got to do to make it sound good is cover up some of them holes, and maybe cover up all of them, but I found you can just cover up a few of them and change that audio just about any way you want to by adding and subtracting electrical tape or whatever you want to use to stop air. And it'd be all I ever have seen. You could do so much with it. So, a lot of times, it's the characteristics of the mic, in other words, the microphone itself is a good mic. It just needs a configuration of air to the back side of the cartridge. And it'll certainly change the sound altogether. Over.
Now, I understand that. But Jim, and I hope everybody else does too, KY6V here for Southcars. You know, it's like the Geico system with a computer. Garbage in with garbage out. You better have a decent voice before you start the input. Thanks, Jim. I see that Gary is back in the saddle. Let's see what's happening here. KC2RMO, Mr. Syracuse, KY6V, over. Okay, you still got the hum, Gary, so something is not right yet. Let me see if there's any other check-ins, and I'll come back to you, Gary. Check-ins, please.
Sierra United, November.
All right, I have Miss Kathy, S-U-N, anybody else, please? All right, Miss Sunshine, you have the deck all to yourself. KY6V, please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Gordon. I was listening in the background, and I heard Jim tell me that my audio sounded okay, and I hope it's still sounding okay and not too hot. But, you know, at one point, I really hope to do a net maybe on a Windows 8 versus Windows 7, because I really like this system. But, you know, I have a question. I have several laptops. I have several desktops, and most of the desktops I use the Logitech on, and I use that on my laptops too. But do you recall way back when you and Dana sort of trained me as an NCS, or maybe it was for the database, we actually talked through my computer. I have a computer microphone through the laptops, and I actually talked through that. So maybe you could explain the difference, because if you can remember way back when, it was a little different. One of my students today on our old monitors decided to go into the top, and there was actually a microphone up there, and talk into that microphone to see how he could hear himself. Maybe you could explain, if you can think about that, why some of the computers are made with those input, you know, inner microphones, where we could have the headsets we have now, where they're so much better. So I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Gordon, KY6B, and hopefully you can enlighten me a little bit with that, and tell me how I'm sounding now. Hopefully it's okay. KY6B from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Well, first of all, you're sounding great, Kathy. KY6B here for South Cars. I'm not sure that I got the full complement of your questions here. I did hear about the inboard microphone, and I'll address that just shortly. I had some disturbance in the background, so I got a little bit distracted, and I apologize for that. I think you're on a laptop, Kathy. Most laptops have a built-in microphone. Not all of them, but most of them have a built-in microphone. You can't find the dude. You know, it's a tiny little hole that's poked out someplace on the screen or the body of the laptop. But any rate, that acts as a microphone, and you can use that for communication like we're talking right now. You have the ability in your laptop protocol to disengage that local microphone and use a external microphone plugged into one of the jacks, such as the Logitech that you're on right now. They all work very well. Now, the local microphone normally has a little bit of a learning curve to it. You have to know how close you have to be to it for the proper level. You have to be consistent in your positioning to it. You cannot have the gain too loud, or that local microphone on the laptop will pick up your dog barking, your cat meowing, and the garbage truck going down the street going beep, beep, beep if it's going backwards. Does that make sense? And what was the other part of your question, please? Over.
Well, Gordon, that makes perfect sense. But I was making the comment back, do you remember way back when, 2009, I believe, you and Dana sort of trained me on my laptop? I didn't have a mic at all at that time. I used my laptop mic, and actually I remember Dana saying I sounded very well on it, and that was an older laptop. My laptop right now, I have no clue where that mic is, but my previous one, it was right straight across the top, and the previous one before that was also across the top, so I'm not sure where my microphone is on this one. But you know, a lot of them are made with the microphones. I made a comment about my students today. I'm not sure if you heard that. The old monitors, you know, those big monitors, those big ugly monitors. He actually went up to, there's a little microphone right at the top of it, and he decided to talk into it and hear how he sounded. And you know what? He sounded really loud. So I'm not sure they ever made those. I wasn't aware they ever made them. So I just wanted to make that comment. That's not something you have to talk about because you have a lot of other microphones you can talk about. But I wanted to say that. Gary is back. I'm not sure if he's hearing us or not, but maybe you can make a call back out to him. He seems to be having those gremlins I've had for a couple weeks. Back to you, KY6V from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
All right. Thanks, Kathy. KY6V here for South Cars. I've seen the monitors that, you know, have a built-in microphone. I think the vogue today, besides the built-in microphones that you find in laptops, is your video camera. You know, your video camera also has a microphone attached with it. And if you're into that type of transfer of information, there's a lot to learn there, too. The proper setting of the gain of that camera mic, the proximity of that camera mic to your actual body, and on it goes. It's just a learning experience. Okay, thank you, Kathy. Let me see. Gary, are you back with something besides KY6V? Over. Well, I didn't hear any hum. Hey, dude, you keyed up fine. Sounded pretty clean, but I didn't hear anything. Over. Yeah, a little low level. The hum is reduced by a number of dBs, but no audio. One more time, Gary, and we'll keep it going. Over. Well, I don't know. It seems to me at the moment that we've got Syracuse in serious problems. I'm not getting any audio, Gary. There's something amiss in the audio chain, and I really think it's a plug somewhere. You got so many plugs, you know. You're plugging your microphone into a mixer. The mixer comes out and plugs into the sound card, and then you got all these other contraptions that are tied into the mixer, and I think things are getting mixed up. All right, let's see, guys and gals, we're 19 minutes into the hour, and that's the second hour. 8:19 is what I've got, Eastern Daylight Time. Anybody else like to come in and comment? We're talking about microphones. We're talking about ISP servers, the cable servers. We're talking about routers, we're talking about modems, and we're talking about anything you'd like to talk about. KY6V, any other check-ins, please? Over.
VXP with a comment.
And I appreciate that. Rick, stand by. Anybody else, please? All right, you got it by yourself, Mr. Ohio. Go ahead. KY6V, over.
Send one VXP. Yeah, I think of the microphones on the laptop. I have an HP 2000, and that microphone is right next to the camera at the top edge of the screen. And I try to think of an easy way to compare it. It's almost like taking your cell phone and putting it on speakerphone and having the phone about maybe a foot and a half away from your mouth, and you tend to pick up a lot of background noise as well as the voice, but the voice is very low. So that's how I think about them. With picking up this new laptop, I also picked up another headset. And this one runs a little bit, it was strange. I had to go into the setup and readjust the mic gain. I'm actually running full gain, and it tends to be excuse me, a little bit better. I tried to use my older one, and the only reason I replaced it was because I had one of the ear sides on the left side tended to drop out at times, so I was not really getting the audio on both sides of my head, and I said, well, let me try it. I put that one on the computer first and tried it, and it just didn't sound right. The audio wasn't quite there. So I think with the different headsets, each one excuse me, each one tends to be a little different audio-wise, and this one, it actually has a smaller mic on the boom itself, and it took a little while to get used to it, but I think it works quite well. But like I say, it's just comparing the mics on the comparing the microphone on the laptop is, like I say, is almost like having a cell phone with putting it on speakerphone and pulling it away from your face and trying to talk. And that's the only way I can think about it. And one GXP back to net control.
Okay, well, thank you for that, Rick. KY6V here. Four Southgars squawking from Central Florida. You know, there's a situation that I've found through the years, Rick, where no microphone gain is really the same. As you change microphones, you have to change your gain settings for that particular cartridge. You know, some are more sensitive to sound than others, and others are not as sensitive as sound. So, you know, I find this, what you were just saying, very normal. So if you're switching microphones, you know, you have to set the parameters for that particular microphone. I think what happens, in my humble opinion, is you're talking about speaker mics. People don't understand, generally speaking, that if you are close proximity of that microphone pickup, you're normally going to be loud and clear. If you sit back in your swivel chair at the desk and the microphone is on top of your computer 3 feet away, you're going to sound like there's a space void in between you and the microphone. And that space void will also pick up anything else that's going in the room, like your dog barking and that kind of thing. So I think it's just a learning process. What do you think, Rick? Over.
Yeah, I definitely think of that. Like I say, it picks up all the background noise. But I can't see sitting at a laptop and having the distance roughly about a foot away. The other thing I think about in applications with this is if you're in a room that has a high amount of echo, that also is picked up on the mic as well. But the boom mic, the headsets have a noise canceling capability, which tends to eliminate that problem.
Well, that's an excellent point. I'm not sure that the headsets generally have much of a noise canceling situation, but it's a close talk microphone. The boom that comes out of the headset is normally within a couple of inches of your mouth where the sound comes out. It's not sensitive enough to pick up the other stuff around the room. And that, you know, that can get nasty. If you have no curtains in the room, you got wood paneling, I mean, you're in Echo City, Rick, over.
Yeah, that's definitely enough. I have my TV, not, volume is not too loud, but I've yet to hear people say anything about having the TV on as well. Actually, like I say, the headsets that I've seen on the market, that's one of the features they do say is noise-canceling mic. And this one here is a real small, it's a little bit bigger than a pencil. And I'm not talking directly into it, it's actually off to the side. And I find that works much better than trying to talk right directly into it.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. That's been a standard for a long time. You know, what you want to try to do, Rick, is to talk across the microphone and not directly into it. You get into problems with what's called, in the broadcasting industry anyway, sibilance, where your P's pop and your S's go st, and, you know, that kind of stuff. If you talk across the cartridge as opposed to directly in it, you don't have that kind of problem. All right, let me take another check with Syracuse. I see him online. Vasos los, mi amigo. KC2RMO from KY6V, over.
Octo Libre, I don't know. I'm looking at the meter. The meter looks happy, and I just came back from the EchoLink test server, and everything seemed okay. So how are we sounding?
Well, you sound like Mr. Syracuse. Welcome back, sir. Wave to the people across the street. Over.
They're waving back too. I think we're going to be okay, and I think we may have found the problem, and you diagnosed it correctly, but it was a hard one to find because I wiggled, and when I wiggled, nothing happened, and nothing happened until I jiggled. And once I jiggled, I think we found our problem. So it's off to Radio Shack and a new cable for me, I think is what the deal is. So I think we got it in good enough shape to last the rest of the night, so we should be okay. But, Gordon, I'll tell you one thing. You run a great net, that's for sure. And thank you once again for being there. We are on the Thursday Night Informational Network, and again, my thanks to KY6V for handling things while we had to hammer out our technical difficulties. Tonight, we're talking about microphones, cable companies, proxies and routers, and also interconnect cable. We're getting them, too. We're on the last of the topics tonight, and it's my favorite, too, which is microphones. Now, there are about as many different microphones as there are people who use them. Now, everybody seems to have a favorite. Some have become iconic through the years, and we'll look at some of those in a minute. But first, let's look at some of the common types of microphones. There's the carbon microphone, which is the oldest and simplest microphone. It uses carbon dust. This is the technology used in the very first telephones and is still used in some telephones today. The carbon dust has a thin metal or plastic diaphragm on one side. As the sound waves hit the diaphragm, they compress the carbon dust, and that changes its resistance. By running a current through the carbon, the changing resistance changes the amount of current that flows. So basically, you're talking across a resistor. A dynamic microphone, like a speaker in reverse, a dynamic microphone takes advantage of electromagnetic effects. Try that again. It's electromagnetic effects, okay? When a magnet moves past a wire or a coil of wire, the magnet induces the current to flow in the wire. Now, if a dynamic microphone in a dynamic mic, the diaphragm moves either a magnet or a coil when sound waves hit the diaphragm, and the movement creates a small current, and that, of course, goes to a preamplifier and then an amplifier. There are ribbon microphones. Gordon had mentioned one of these earlier, okay, and in a ribbon microphone, a thin ribbon, usually aluminum, is suspended in a magnetic field. Sound waves hit the ribbon, which changes the current flowing through it. Ribbon microphones are bidirectional, meaning they pick up sounds from both sides of the mic. And you've probably seen these. You're probably very familiar with those. They're the kind of those. There's many different types, actually, but the stereotypical one is that diamond-shaped basket, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. We have a couple of examples of that. Then there's the condenser microphone and its cousin, the electret microphone. A condenser microphone is essentially a capacitor with one plate of the capacitor moving in response to the sound waves. The movement changes the capacitance of the capacitor, and these changes are amplified to create a measurable signal. Condenser microphones usually need a small battery to provide a voltage across the capacitor. And last but certainly not least is the crystal microphone. Certain crystals change their electrical properties when they change shape. By attaching a diaphragm to a crystal, the crystal will create a signal when the sound waves hit the diaphragm. I'm going to buy a nickel for a minute, and we'll talk about some pretty familiar and pretty famous microphones. And we're back, and we're still working, so everything's looking great. And one of my favorites is the one I'm talking to you over right now. It is the Behringer C1, in my opinion, the world's best $50 microphone. I'm talking to you on it right now. Like I said, it sounds much more expensive than it costs. It is a large diaphragm condenser microphone with a cardioid polar pattern, which means basically the pickup pattern looks like a heart, like if you were to draw a heart and lay it flat. So it is directional. Sounds very much like a good quality studio microphone, but doesn't cost you an awful lot. The downside of this particular microphone is that it does need a power supply or a power source, what they call phantom power, and I take that off the mixing board that it goes through. The RCA Type 77 is a magnificent microphone, and it is one of my favorite microphones. And you would know it immediately to look at it. It is the Johnny Carson microphone. It is the David Letterman microphone. It's that kind of beautiful classic design, that pill-shaped microphone. It is the standard of really great old ribbon mics. It is a design that goes all the way back to the 1930s. It is extremely rugged. It is a great sounding microphone. It has a wonderful mid-range presence to it. It just brings out the best of everything. People who use these never give them up. They are well sought after. A lot of modern recording studios like to use them. I have had a lot of experience with the 77s, particularly the 77DX, which was a type of 77, one of the variants of the 77, which allowed you to change the directional pattern of it. And I use that actually on the air both as my personal favorite microphone, and I use that for live studio pickups as well. It was wonderful for those sort of things, and we used to get lots and lots of really nice compliments on the way some of our, we used to do live broadcasts of some of the local bands, and we used to get great audio comments on that, and then people would say, "What's your secret?" And I wouldn't tell them because it was, a lot of it had to do with those 77DXs that we used. They're pretty good. The cousin to the 77DX is another RCA microphone called the RCA 44, and I'm going to buy a nickel. The RCA 44 is a ribbon microphone, and we were talking about that diamond-shaped basket. And it is that's what a 44 is, and the parts of the 44 family. It's a design from the 30s. It still sounds great today. It has a very wide frequency response. If you can imagine, just think about this for a minute. If you can imagine a mic that was designed in 1930 that has a frequency response of 50 to 15,000 hertz, that's pretty remarkable, especially since a lot of the equipment back then couldn't reproduce that frequency range. It was actually better than the equipment that it was feeding. It sounds great. It is a rugged microphone for a ribbon microphone. It can easily handle changes in temperature, humidity, and barometric pressure. It is a great sounding mic for both music and voice. It is a prized possession for any recording studio's mic locker too. You'll see them also as props in movies. There's the Electrovoice RE20, which is the basic radio microphone used today. That is the if you look in any modern radio studio, you're going to see an RE20. Just about anybody who is anybody uses one, and even people who aren't use them too. It's a terrifically rugged mic, a very clean-sounding microphone. I think that's probably why most folks like them. Hard to overload, and has a great speech characteristics, but also can be used very successfully for using for recording music. It has got a very nice flat frequency response, and most Electro Voice microphones do too. Also, one of the nice things about the RE20. Is that it is pretty much impervious to studio noises like rumble and shock. It has built-in filters for that. You can put it inside a shock mount, but even if you use it without that, it's a pretty quiet microphone as well. Let me buy a nickel. And we're talking about hardware tonight, and we're talking in this segment about microphones, and we're coming up on my favorite microphone, probably next to that 77DX. It's the Neumann U47. It is a design from post-war Germany that to this day is prized by producers and recording engineers. How does it sound? Well, listen to any early and actually many of the later Beatles recordings and you'll hear it. Frank Sinatra used it too. It has a warm, clear, and almost magical sound quality to it. People happily pay multiple thousands of dollars nowadays to get their hands on one. And I think the original selling price for a U47 was about $400, and I have actually seen them go for $4,000 now. And people will not even bat an eye if they can get a mint one. They're just a terrific sounding microphone. There were many U-47s and U-48s used for the Beatles recordings. George Martin wrote that it was his favorite microphone. U-47s are pictured on many Beatles recording studio pictures. Their aggressive sound makes them an excellent choice for many rock applications. Drums, guitar amps, and brass instruments shine when sitting behind a U-47. It just is a great all-around microphone, and if you ever have a chance to use one, you'll never forget it, that's for sure. And finally, the Astatic D-103, and that is a favorite among CBers and hams alike. It's the ubiquitous lollipop mic. It comes in amplified and non-amplified models. It's a crystal mic, so it has a high output. It has an excellent response and presence in the speech frequencies. Been around again. One of those mic designs that has been around forever, since the 30s. The Static had been making this. I think they stopped making them somewhere in the early 80s, but plenty of them out there around. And a terrific microphone for speech applications. It really is great for that. And looks kind of cool, too. There's a certain coolness factor to that D-103. So we're talking about microphones right now. Maybe you've got a favorite, or maybe I left something off the list. We'd like to hear from you. We'll take check-ins right now on the TIN. This is South Cars.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
And 6 Victor, sir.
And we have BXP Rick out in Ohio. Come on aboard there, sir.
Just a little clarification. You mentioned D-103. It's actually D-104. I had one of those. And I liked it, but the only drawback was it did require that little extra power as far as being amplified. And 9-volt batteries do not last very long. But D-104, and I also had another one by Astatic. It was one of the little handheld type mics that had the echo capability, and I got rid of that one because it just didn't like to work on a lot of the different radios. But thinking about the microphones, I remember one of my favorites. I remember always in school where the principal would have the PA system in the office, and he had the classical, well, I shouldn't say classical, but I remember seeing it was a Heil mic, and I hear a lot of people talk a lot about Heil mics, all the different models, the ranges and everything. Quite a system that Bob Heil has made up. N1TXP back to Net Control.
Well, thank you, sir. Yeah, I know there was a 104 as well. I thought, and maybe I'm wrong, and I should have probably looked it up a little more, but the I thought the 103 was the non-amplified and the 104 was the amplified, but I could be wrong. And since you owned one, we'll take your word for it. But we all know it was the same thing. That Heil microphone, I use a Heil on my HF rig. I use a Heil IC. I use an IC718 when I'm using an HF rig, and I use the Heil IC for that, and terrific sounding microphone. So it sounds really, really good, very well matched to the input stage of that of all ICOM radios, it seems, and just a real good sounder. But yeah, that's some good stuff, and that's one of those things that's going to be around forever. I think people, as long as people are talking in amateur radio, I think you're going to see an ecstatic D104. It'll be out there, that's for sure. Thanks for checking in, Rick, and we'll move it along. We'll go to 6 Victor. Come on in, sir, and it's again my pleasure to have you not only participating tonight, but saving my bacon, too. So come on aboard.
Well, that's my pleasure, Gary. Thank you, sir. Gordon here, KY6V. Had a lot of fun with the lollipop microphones. Just remember, guys and gals, that's a high impedance cartridge. It's a crystal type microphone, you know, about 50K. And in these days, when you're plugging it into a newfangled transistor that operated transceiver that wants to see 600 ohms, you got a problem. So a little matching transformer and that kind of thing is needed. Gary, I just wanted to mention that some out there may not understand the frequency response, and maybe a comment or two on that might be appropriate. You know, every microphone hopefully produces the frequency of your audio properly. That being the lower frequencies of your audio, the bass frequencies, would have the same amplitude as the mid frequencies, as the same amplitude as the higher frequencies. Now, be this 50 KC or kilohertz on the low side and 15 to 20 KC on the high side, if you had available to you a good oscilloscope, a audio spectrum analyzer, you could see what is happening when you enunciate into the microphone. Let me buy a nickel here, Gary. This is to say that you may find that your lower range is at full amplitude on these test equipment. Your mid-range may be down 3 or 6 dB in amplitude. Your high range may be vacillating between 2, 3, or 6 dB in amplitude. That is not flat. What we are saying is that whatever frequency you produce into that microphone, when it is a flat response, the amplitude will be the same. Do you agree with that, Gary? KY6V, over.
Indeed, I do. And I would add some other comment to that, too, and then I'll throw it back to you to hear your comment on the comment. For those who may not be familiar with that whole discussion of frequency response, your ears in a person with normal hearing will hear between 20 and 20,000 hertz, and that's 20 on the low end, and 20,000, of course, on the high end. So that's the limits of human hearing. So the idea is if you are recording, you want to capture as much of that frequency range as you can, so that it sounds at least lifelike to you. Now, here's the thing. Microphones all have different characteristics, and this is, I think, what Gordon was trying to tell us here. That you can measure something out, and it's going to be 3 dB high here and 2 dB low here, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, you'll never get a perfectly flat response. That's a good thing, and that's a bad thing. Okay, so for people that for instance, are on the air, people that are on radio, let's say, you don't really care what the frequency response of that microphone is. Obviously, you'd want it to be as wide as possible, but, you know, you can close talk that microphone, and you can say, like, you know, 96.9 in stereo, and the whole thing, you can take advantage of, say, the proximity effect. That's called the proximity effect. When you get really close to a microphone, and it increases the bass response. So, you know, you have that going for you, too. So you can exploit the characteristics of a microphone. So as Gordon was saying, no mic is absolutely flat. Every mic has its own characteristics. And depending upon the use for that mic, you select a microphone with or without the characteristics that you're shooting for. Does that sound reasonable to you, sir?
Oh, absolutely, Gary. I have no qualms with what you just said at all. But you haven't got into the era of compressors. And when a microphone has a low bass and the compressor has been set for an accentuated bass, the ball game has changed. Over.
Oh, you are so right. And I'm a big compression person. I am not a purist when it comes to that. I like a lot of compression on a microphone audio chain. I don't necessarily like to hear it on an FM radio station. It sounds great. You run a heavy compression on an AM station, when done correctly, can sound incredible. But I definitely like a lot of compression, a lot of clean compression on a mic, that is for sure, especially if you're using a particularly good mic. It sounds good. And when you get into that class of, say, the Neumanns and what have you, even an RE20, although RE20s, to me, in my ear, they sound a little mid-rangey. And when you compress them a little bit, it kind of brings that amount, that out, and it's maybe a little too midy, you know, for me. And then what I hear is a lot of guys, what they'll do, they like to run the compression up on the RE20, so it brings up that mid peak, and so they try to compensate it, and they start jacking the bass, and then it sounds mushy, you know. So you take a very good sounding microphone, and you kind of skunk it up, you know. So you have to be careful about what you're doing. And audio compressors, for those who don't know, are basically a device that gives you more of what you got. That's basically it. It takes lower passages and brings them up to the level of higher passages, but it also has a particularly desirable, for those who use their voices on the air, it has a particularly nice feature that it makes you sound bigger than you are. It's really cool if you use it wisely. It's like anything else. You have to use it wisely. One of the things that I want to do for this setup here in the future, when I get time to do it and a few more bucks, I'm trying to pick up a used audio compressor, and I want to use it on this setup too. So kind of let's see where that's going. I've got one for the guitar. I I even use audio compression on my guitars. Let me buy a nickel for a second here, because that's my secret weapon. When I'm jamming with this one guy that I jam with every now and then, he's really good, but it's my equalizer. So it kind of evens the score up a little bit. So we're talking about microphones tonight, and we're talking about things like compression and all that stuff. And Gordon, what do you think? What do you think about that? Do you think, as an engineer, and as a not just a good engineer, but a great engineer, what do you think about that? Do you agree with the wise use of compression when possible?
Well, I certainly do, but there's so many complications on that, Gary. KY6V here. As an example, let's say that you're setting audio levels for a TV station. And what we would normally do is to compress to a situation where the mid-range, as you know, 500 hertz to 1,000 or a little bit above, and the harmonics involved is where the audio amplification and intelligibility really is. So, okay, you sit back, Gary, and you say, I'm going to set this compression where I want maximum amplitude at 500 kc to, let's say, 1200. This is all good for normal programming. Then you have these cats, and maybe this is not a subject for tonight, but you have these guys and gals that are involved in making promos for your station, all right? And they amplify that range of 500 to, let's say, 1,200, three times of normal. And these poor people sitting back in their living room listening to this television station all of a sudden get a commercial coming up, and it is three times louder than it should be, and that shouldn't be. I'll put it that way. Over.
You're totally right, and that kind of reminded me. Gee whiz, I forgot all about that, too. When we'd get stuff in from an agency, let's say, and that's, you're exactly right. These guys would have these things processed to the hilt, and this guy would be like, you'll save like never before with thousands and thousands and, and everything like that. And I'd be there, doing something, and, well, it's a really good idea, it's like, how can you compete with it? That is one of the problems that you face if you're gonna produce some audio, let's say, on your station, and you have a particular sound that you're going for, and in your case, what you were just describing, and again, just to clarify it maybe a little bit for folks that you're trying to what Gordon was talking about was trying to get a range of frequencies that has the greatest amount of speech intelligibility, and then amplify them so that you get the most bang for the buck, okay? Because really, if your low frequencies don't have a lot of intelligibility, and your very high frequencies don't do much for intelligibility, it's that range that Gordon was talking about, that mid-range, and that's where you want to put the most of your power into. And therefore, people listen, they hear it, and everything is nice, clear, clean audio. When you get into radio, it's a little bit of a different bag that you're dealing with, because radio, obviously, in TV, you're watching a picture, you're hearing the voice, but you're not necessarily dealing with, number one, the sound of the music and the sound of the person on the air. Again, this gets to be very subjective, and you could go on for quite a long time about this, at a much higher level, too. You get very subjective about the way your radio station sounds, and you try to tailor a sound for that. I mean, when I was talking to Gordon about how you take a lot of compression on an AM station. Let me just buy a nickel for a minute here.
Hey. bom dia, boa tarde, boa noite. É Papa Uniforme 7, Alfa Delta Bravo, Kilo Charlie 2, Roma Mike Oscar, Gary Agnes. Buenas noites, Adriano Brasil.
Station calling from Brazil. Welcome aboard. This is the TIN network on South Cars. If you'd like to check in, please stand by. As I was saying, using a lot of compression on an AM station makes it sound louder, makes it sound more dynamic, makes it sound big. If you do too much of it, say, on an FM station where you have a wider frequency response, it can kind of increase listener fatigue. So that's compression in a nutshell. And, one of the really cool things about broadcast engineering, and I think one of these nights I'd like to do a network interviewing Gordon on that particular topic too, on broadcast engineering, because it is it's a fascinating field, number one, and I, as a program director of a radio station, used to have a lot of heart-to-heart talks with my chief engineer. Because a lot of times the goals that you have are very different, and it's kind of an exercise in civility sometimes, and it also takes a good station manager to keep you from killing each other. So it really works out pretty well. But Gordon knows exactly what I'm talking about. We're talking about microphones in this segment, and we're taking check-ins right now. So if anybody would like to come aboard, we'd love to hear from you. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars. Okay, nothing heard right now. But it's been a good night in spite of the fact that we've had a few technical glitches tonight. We got around them, and that's the cool thing. I really appreciate everybody listening tonight. We'll have to do this again sometime when things aren't blowing up and what have you. We did have a station calling in from Brazil. And if you're still there, we'd love to hear from you. So, Brazil, please come aboard. Let's try them one time more. The Brazilian station, please come aboard. Well, nothing heard. If you do want to join us again, please come aboard. Brazilian station, anytime you'd like. We're getting kind of down to things right now, so we'll take one more round of check-ins, shall we? One final round. And let's see if maybe Brazil will join us again this time. So last round, if you would, please, for check-ins on the TIN.
VXP.
We have Rick and anybody else. Okay, Rick, come on aboard.
Yeah, I see that Brazilian station backed out. I've had a thought in mind. I think it would be really nice if we could get... I forget the call signs, but Bob Heil and the other one would be George from Ham Nation. That'd be really kind of an interesting topics. Either one for Bob Heil for microphones, because with his background of all the different applications of microphones and different setups that he does. That'd be really I think that might be a pretty interesting net to maybe get him in for on a TIN. Of course, I know he's going to be tied up for up to the Ham Fest, but it might be something in the future that he could really get into the background of some of the different types of mics and the sound systems. And 1-3-XP back to net control.
You know, that would be pretty interesting if we could get our hands on him. That really would. I had pleasure talking to him in Dayton a couple of years back. And interesting guy. Very interesting guy. Very personable guy. You mentioned about the sound systems. He used to rent these powerhouse sound systems to bands when they came into town. There was one of the things that one of his the things in his background. Interesting man. So, yeah, you never know. Maybe one time we'll reach out to Bob and maybe we can get him here. Be a great little net, that's for sure. So anybody else will take any other check-ins right now? Any last round check-ins for the TIN? I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars. Well, nothing heard, so we'll shut her down. It's been a pleasure, and again, my thanks to Gordon KY6V for stepping right in there when the technical bugs came in and got us. We'll talk to you again soon. That's for sure. And again, my appreciation for everybody being there. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VoIPnet schedules and general information may be found on the World Wide Web at voip.southcars.com. Your net control for this session has been Gary, KC2RMO, saying 73 and closing this VoIP session. Thanks for your participation. This net is closed.
This has been the South Cars Outreach Program. Join us again next time for another in our series of training sessions for amateur radio operators. Goodbye for now.